know, one of the things that surprised me during the week when I heard that Mitchell McLaughlin, the Speaker of the Assembly, is 70 years old. I thought Mitchell McLaughlin was about 55, but he is 70. He's going to be stepping down. And then I had double surprise when I discovered that Father Brian D'Arcy is 70 years old, and he's on this line. Father D'Arcy, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
How on earth are you 70? I thought you were just coming up to 60.
Not at all, Frank. Should I have been around since old God's time, you know?
But yeah, you have been around forever. Like, you were a showband icon.
And God knows most of them are dead now. I'm lucky to be around at all, you know. You don't... the Bible says that the allotted time for a human being is 70, and you'd be old enough to know that 70 adds up to 70.
So you're living on borrowed time.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Frank.
And you're mad keen for the writing. Yes, you write for the tabloid papers sometimes. You broadcast on the radio. You write books. You're on your 15th, probably on your 16th, but this is your 15th book. And this one apparently is proving popular because Father Brian D'Arcy has put his sermons into print. Am I right on that?
You're partly right. You're very much right in it, Frank, actually. One of the difficulties I had, this is certainly a book I didn't want to write, because I always believe that sermons are for a particular day, and when they're preached, that's the end of them. You might take an odd idea or probably a little bit of research out of them for some other days, but that's them finished. And I write sermons after I have preached them, because that gives me, you know, I usually preach 2-3 times over the weekend, and after I've preached 2-3 times over the weekend, you know, with the glassy eyes what works, and you know by the collection what doesn't and what does work, you see. So you have to, at the end of it, you're pretty clear. So I usually write, jot down bits of the sermons when on Sunday night, and for the simple reason that I don't want to preach the same thing again next year or the next 3 years when that comes around. And so I had a group of these sermons, and unfortunately I did mention it to the publishers, they said, have you any sermons? And so they said, didn't make a book. And I said, no, most definitely not. What's the spoken word is one thing, the written word is an entirely different thing. But they did say that if they got a woman theologian to look through them and see if there were bits that might be useful to people, and it's her selection of bits of my sermons, so that's what's in the book. I went through it afterwards, rewrote a few of them, thought a lot of them were out of date, and put in others in their place, but essentially that's what it is. And they're little reflections, thoughts, not connected with each other at all. Each page is different, practically. And I find that sort of a book. When I go to pray at night myself, late at night, I always find if you come with an empty hand, you actually get an empty mind. So some wee prayer starter or something like that, or just a time to reflect. I think, Frank, that there's a big need that for people, and a big thirst from people for just a little time to step outside the rush, whether they're religious or whether they're not religious, just a little time to reflect. And very often people are not getting that in churches anymore and are doing it themselves, and so we have mindfulness and all sorts of things which are pretty much, you know, a substitute, and a good substitute for meditation. And but it does add up to the fact that we need a little bit of self-reflection, and this book is exactly for that.
Yeah, I go to church, and yes, I've been lucky enough to be in a variety of churches recently for different reasons. But there's one thing that the vicar, as I experienced across in England, or the minister here, or more regularly for me, a priest, yes, in a mass, they all have one thing in common. They can be, and listen, so can weathermen and radio presenters have, yes, this in common with them. They can be boring. And if they decide to quote the Bible too much, or indeed to refer to theology too much, I personally glaze over. It's a, yes, bit like on RTE, sometimes BBC do it as well. You've done it with Radio 2 and all of that. This sort of thought for the day type thing.
Yes.
If someone tells a story, like, yes, a human interest story,
yes,
I'm with them. If they start to be theological or quoting from the Bible, maybe it's just me, but I just glaze over.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and be as guilty of that as anyone, because if you've studied a thing and looked at it and thought about it, you want to heap a lot of stuff on people, and I'm very guilty of that. I'm also very aware that, you know, one of the preachers we quote often was Jesus Christ, and what did he do? He told stories, parables, and you see, it's like a comedian or like anybody else. If I tell a joke or a story, 5 years' time, time if I repeat it to people. So you told that joke before. You know, I mean, people remember stories. They mightn't remember the point of the story, and that's the trick. If you can have a story with a point, then I think then it works for people. But you're absolutely, that's a very fair criticism, and I accept it wholeheartedly. But this, as I say, is a book of, you know, a couple of hundred words each, and there's no big long sermons in it, that I assure you.
I actually was taken by a priest recently who I heard, and I started to listen to him because he at the quite early on in the sermon, he says, you know, sometimes you are going through the day and you think there's bugger all happening. And the very fact that he said that, you know, I thought, what? That sounds like a country farmer speaking. And, you know, some people might find the language slightly offensive, but it engages you.
Well, one of the things that I used to learn when I was younger in communications in the Communication Centre in Dublin, and one of the things we used to say to people at that stage was, you know, that people don't want to hear a theologian lecturing. They want to hear a man, or in the present case, in other churches, a woman, a man or a woman speaking. You know, not preaching at them, but speaking from their own experience. And I think it's from your own experience, sharing that is wonderful. In other words, if it has passed through your head is one thing, but if the Bible hasn't passed through your heart, it's a pretty useless sort of thing to do. You're lecturing people, but really and truly, the engaging people with everything is that there must be a passion about it. And I think the title of the book, Frank, indicates that, and Catch the Heart Off Guard. It's from a wonderful poem called Postscript by Seamus Heaney. And he talks about sometimes it's standing on the side of the mountain in Clare, and the gust of wind came at them, himself and Brian Freel and their respective wives. And it was so invigorating that it just, he said, and caught the heart off guard and blew it open. The beauty of the scene just was inexplicable in words, but it was an experience that you'd never forget. And I think that's what, you know, that self-reflection does that to you. You find insights and little nuggets that just blow your heart wide open.
And does the Catholic hierarchy worry at all when Darcy releases another book, The Maverick That You Are?
You'd need to ask that. I need to ask them that. I certainly don't worry about that at all anymore, because basically it's lovely to have arrived at a stage in life where you are silenced for something that the Pope is now trying to get the cardinals to believe.
Yeah, just bring us up to date with where you were. It was Benedict that wrapped your knuckles, wasn't it?
It was Benedict's regime. I would doubt if Benedict ever heard of me. But it was a man called Levada who was head of the CDF at the time. But you're quite right. He was Benedict's successor in that role, and was, as it were, you know, the man who was the enforcer, as it were. But it was during that regime. Francis has been a breath of fresh air to it. Technically, nothing has changed, Frank. I'm still in the same position.
How did you offend? Remind us how you offended.
I don't know how I offended, but really what I said was, by writing in the Sunday World, and it was because of what I had written in the Sunday World that they came after me, saying that, you know, that we should think about having married priests, that it was an absolute disgrace the way the people right up to the Pope had dealt with the sexual abuse of children within the church. And I kept writing about that and kept saying that, and I think that was the thing that really got them. I also said that women are not respected in the church, and that therefore they, you know, even respect would be a start, and I didn't see any reason why people couldn't be ordained, women couldn't be ordained. I went on to say such things as, you know, that people in second relationships need to be cared for, and that we should have a church that is welcoming rather than a church that is putting people out of it all the time. I still believe those passionately. I would say them again anywhere in the world, because I believe that's what Christ would want with his church.
And where do you stand at this moment on marriage equality?
I'm okay with that. I'm okay. The state wants to do that. That's what the state should do. The state is open to that. The state has to legislate for its own people. And I think it's, I said this in an article before the referendum in the South, I had no vote in the referendum in the South. I would love to have had a vote. I think I should have had a vote. I was quite annoyed that I hadn't a vote in constitutional matters. And therefore I couldn't say how I would vote because I didn't. Hadn't got a vote.
Well, but why did you think you should have had a vote if you're from Fermanagh?
Well, I still think it's if it's in the island of Ireland, I like to think that it's a matter that we should have some say in.
Okay, so if you had have had the vote, what way would you have voted?
I would have voted yes.
And you would encourage people to push on here, to lobby, try and convince the
No, I don't encourage people to follow their conscience and whatever that is. For me, I don't, you know, I've always believed that I've dealt with gay people and all my entire life, and the pain that people are put through because of the attitudes of society. I was living in the South when it was became homosexuality was decriminalised. I wrote in favour of it at that time. Maura Gagan Quinn was the lady who brought it in. I spoke to her and many times encouraged her to keep on doing it because I saw the pain and the utter horrendous way that gay people were treated. Nobody decides to be gay. I am of the opinion that God doesn't make second-hand goods, and if God makes people in a certain way, then we cannot, under any circumstances, say that God cannot find a way of accepting their love. I mean, I mightn't like it, you mightn't like it, that's not the question. How does God treat good people who are trying to be the best they can? The state then has its duty to look after it. I can never see a church accepting, redefining marriage to accept gay people, but there's nobody asking the churches to do that. It's the state is looking after it, and the state has a duty to do it, whatever the state wishes to do and considers right, and whatever the people think is right, and that has been my view all the time. It is still my view.
Okay, Father Brian Darcy, the new book is called And Catch the Heart Off Guard, the 15th. Good speaking to you, Brian. Thanks for your time. Thank
you. As always, Frank. Thank you.
So there's a stocking filler for you if you know someone who likes to read a sermon. It is Father Brian Darcy.